Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the ABM Conversations Podcast. And no, I am not Yog. I was asked by Yog basically to do a takeover of his show. So that's what we're doing today. And I'm a big fan of the podcast for quite some time now and interact with Yog through LinkedIn. And we talk about the shows and the guests he has. And the keys I'm excited about is the show. He always brings in such great guests continually. His quality is always high. And he is such a great host. So today, I'm going to bring on a great guest, but I'm not necessarily going to try to keep to the level. I'm going to try to do my best I can to hang with him and being a good host. Also, when it comes to looking for someone for the show, we want somebody with some experience. And the biggest audience of this show is marketing and sales SaaS leaders and professionals. And so that's kind of caters to that. So that also helps us, you know, help me immediately know who to pick out for the show. So today for the show, I brought on Megan Bowen, who has 15 years of working in B2B tech startups, leading customer success, account management, sales, marketing, and operations teams. She's built and led teams at Zocdoc, Grubhub, Seamless, and others. She has a great podcast, The Unwritten Playbook. If you haven't listened to it, you should. It's a deep dive into marketing and sales and customer success leaders. It's just a great show. So, and currently, she is the COO and CCO at Refine Labs. And Chris Walker and herself do a podcast called Demand Gen Live. And if you haven't heard it or seen it on LinkedIn, you're underneath a rock. Because I'm a weekly listener. I'm a big fan. And they're good. So welcome. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks so much for the introduction, Scott. It's great to be here. You're doing an excellent job as a host so far. I think Yog would be really proud.
Oh, that's great. I'm hoping you'll carry me.
And I'm excited to get into the topic today. I think that, you know, a lot of people talk about marketing and sales alignment, but I think it's really important to look big picture at marketing, sales, and customer success and think about everything much more holistically as you're really building a company in order to drive the outcomes that you want. So really excited to dig into the topic of conversation today. I think we're going to cover a lot of good ground.
Great. Yeah. The goal today is to take a deep dive into, I think, one of the talked about a lot, but doesn't get even close enough credit, which they sure, which is customer service in a company, customer success teams and all of that. So today I want to go into a deep dive into that aspect, which again is talked about relentlessly, but is not executed very well at companies at all. And Megan, I don't know if she wants me to tell you this, but she might be coming out with a book down the road. And she has a model that's going to be in that she shared with me that I love. It's going to be in the book. And it's a key to success in for customer success teams, right? And it's people success equals customer success equals a company success. So explain that model.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, over the course of my career, I've worked at a lot of different types of companies, you know, from early stage startups to being part of, you know, IPOs and acquisitions, you know, being part of startups that, you know, run out of money or have massive layoffs, right? Like the good, the bad, and the ugly. And through that experience, I think because I had such a variety of experiences in all of these different environments, upon reflection, it was really interesting to really consider when looking at the companies that were most successful, what were the ingredients, what was happening to really fuel that success? And on the other side of the coin, maybe, you know, in the less successful areas, why did that happen too? And through that experience and building teams at multiple companies, I came to the conclusion that your team, your people are really the primary drivers to building great companies, right? Individuals don't build great companies, teams do. And so often when you think about how companies make decisions, they often will put their own self-interest of the company first. Then they'll recognize and honor their customer. And then dead last is usually the internal team and the employees.
Right, right.
And so I'm essentially asserting that you need to flip that completely on its head. And if you actually focus on your team and your people, then focus on your customers, then you're going to get the company outcomes that you're looking for. Growth, retention, advocacy, success. And so we can kind of talk through the details of that model, but that's really the genesis of it and why I think, especially now in this mostly post-pandemic era that we're about to get into, when it really is almost a candidate's market with all of the different changes that are happening, I think companies that win in the future should be thinking about how they can adopt this updated mindset in order to create win-win-win outcomes for their team, their customers, and their company.
See, I love that because I just, boy, how timely. Because in the last 2 weeks, I listened to a successful local company and their CEO. I've listened to it before, but he keeps tweaking it. Most companies, it's shareholders, company, customers, employees, right? And he goes and, but he says what you say more or less, but he flips it and he says, no. He says, the key, we need to stop focusing on things that aren't key to our success, which is our team. You've mentioned that, but it was just, I didn't put the two and two together, but he's been very successful with doing that exact flipping the priorities around.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I feel is essentially the mandate of leadership, if you're, you know, any type of entrepreneur, founder, you know, executive, any type of leader, your mandate is to create the conditions for people to be successful, for your team to be successful, right, your company to be successful. And when you think about it in that way, that's what's going to give you the right mindset to execute against this model effectively. So we can kind of break it down. I have 5 keys to creating the conditions for people to do the best work of their lives. And honestly, these are all equally important, not in any real order. And you really need all of these at once to really make the magic happen. And so the first is a compelling vision and mission. This really speaks to the why, right? Like Simon Sinek talks about this a lot. Right. You really need to tap into a motivation that's beyond a paycheck. And so usually if as a leader, you can clearly articulate why your company exists, what you're trying to accomplish, what your vision for the future is, you will attract people that are excited and motivated that want to make that vision a reality. And so not only is it important that you have a compelling vision and mission, but that you're able to communicate that clearly and effectively so that you can attract the right people to join you on your journey.
Right.
The next is psychological safety and trust. And so at the end of the day, if people don't feel like they can be their true selves and they can express their opinion, they can engage in respectful debate and disagreement, things don't work. Things start to fall apart. And so that creating that psychological safety and trust is really crucial. And that really starts with all of your leaders and your managers within an organization. Every single employee should feel comfortable raising a concern with their leader or their manager without any fear of any retaliation or negative consequences as a result of that. And I think the other piece of it is really inviting people to be their true selves, to bring their full self to work, to not have to hide an aspect of their personality that they're proud of because they feel like they need to fit in. And so that's really crucial to create within an organization.
A friend of mine said, in every crisis or challenge, there's always a blessing, you know? And for me, it's been meeting people like you and Yog, creating relationships virtually. It's been awesome. So I think that's one of the blessings is being able to meet other people and getting to not just seeing them all in their same little thing every time, you know, all dressed up in their work clothes and going to work. And so I think that's actually helped people be more themselves for companies, the whole Zoom, even though a lot of negativity, look at the positivity. I think that has. And then the other thing is I agree 100% with what you said about trying to be able to be honest conversations. But what I've found, I've worked for international companies and small companies, is man, I'll tell you, that has to be worked at constantly, because a lot of companies will say that, but
can't execute it well.
Absolutely. Really, that like you said, we're kind of in how you want to attract the best people is to have people go, yes, no, in this company, you can be honest.
Absolutely. And as a leader, there are very specific things you can do to create this environment. And so one thing that I try to do all the time is when I make a mistake, I like to publicly admit and acknowledge the mistake by going first as a leader and being vulnerable with your team that this happened, this mistake was made, I learned this lesson, this is how I'm carrying forward as a result. It normalizes that. And the reality is everyone makes mistakes. It's but you have to normalize the behavior and begin to avoid carrying on a persona of the perfect leader, right? That they don't exist. I think the second is there needs to be multiple forums for people to share feedback with their manager, through skip levels, with employee experience teams, with surveys. And then you also need to make sure when a difficult topic is broached, that you really watch how you respond to them in the moment. You don't have to agree with someone to be able to acknowledge, listen, and understand where they're coming from. And so making sure that you actively listen when people are bringing things up, avoid getting defensive, and be sure to really internalize what you're hearing before you respond in any which way. And so there's some simple things, but you're right. A lot of people say this, but then their actions don't always follow it. So those are a couple of tactical things people can think about.
I love that. I love the way you say multiple ways to get feedback, because I love that. Because that way some can have to be private, you know, on some things, and some can be public. So I love that. So what are some of the other pieces?
Yeah, we have three more. So the next one is really around autonomy and empowerment. No one likes to be micromanaged, right? People love having the time and the space to work how they want and when they want, to really understand what's expected of them and to figure out how to get there. And so, you know, with autonomy and empowerment, it requires really clear expectations of what great looks like in their role, what you're going to hold them accountable to, and agreeing upon deliverables and deadlines that they believe that they can achieve. And then it's giving them time and space, checking in to provide support, being a sounding board if it can be helpful, but giving people an opportunity to figure things out on their own. Another thing here too is, this is where, as a leader, your job isn't to make sure that everybody does everything perfectly. Your job is to create more leaders. And honestly, all of my best lessons I've learned in my career have been a result of a mistake that I've made. And so it's okay to let your team make mistakes. It's okay to let them try and maybe miss the mark a little bit. That's part of the growing process, and providing that feedback on an ongoing basis and maintaining your belief in them that they can do the thing is what's going to really fuel them to keep moving forward. The fourth is recognition and feedback. It's really surprising to me how underutilized recognition is. It's fascinating how a simple thank you or an acknowledgement of appreciating someone's effort can go such a long way to really motivate somebody and make people feel good. But it's so easy for leaders to just not think about that, not articulate it on a regular basis. It's one of the easiest things that you can do to make people feel appreciated.
A quick trick that I did, which worked for me, but what I did was, is that I had a direct report, and she was a rock star. I mean, she was just above and beyond, you know, just excellent, right? But I would tell myself, it'd be, when's the last time I told her she did a good job? When's the last time I, right? So I started putting in my, as a reminder in my CRM, saying, have I told Terry what a great job she's done?
Yeah.
You know, and personal things too. I do anyway, but I had, because you, exactly what you say is, as a leader, sometimes you get caught up and you got someone doing a good job. You're, oh, great, they're doing a good job. But you have to stop and thank them for doing a good job, you know, or go, great job again. And you do, but you got to get off the hamster wheel and take them aside, take them out to lunch, or take them aside and just say, hey, I just want to tell you, Anyway, so that's kind of what I did was I'd find myself getting kind of, she was such a team, a rock star in helping me and the company succeed.
I support your tactic of reminders, whatever it takes in order to make sure that that's top of mind for you as a leader. I think the other thing is to really also understand how people like to be recognized. Some people like praise in public. So it makes some people uncomfortable and some people prefer receiving that privately. And so really getting to know your team and understanding how they want to receive both praise or any constructive feedback and meeting them on their terms is also really important with respect to this. And again, like, it doesn't have to be over the top. A simple thank you or acknowledgement is often all that's needed to really make people feel good. Of course, you need to make sure that you are, you know, providing regular performance feedback. People always want to know what they can do better and how they can grow, right? So it's important to build in whatever cadence makes sense for your company there. And then I think the last thing is really encouraging an environment where everybody is giving everybody feedback. Feedback should not just be top down. And so, you know, encouraging feedback on the fly between peers, encouraging upward feedback on how leadership can be doing things better. It's a, you know, it's a two-way street, a three-way street, whatever you want to call it. But it's really important.
I love that because, again, it's sports analogies, but, you know, not just having a coach always, you know, give you, but having teammates say, hey, have you ever thought about such and such and stuff? Even though they're helping get better, you don't take it as a critique. You take it as, you know, like constructive criticism or constructive improvement, you know?
Absolutely.
So no, I totally agree. I love that.
And then the last one is achievement and growth. And so humans need to feel like they're making progress. That is how we're wired, right? We like to have goals. We like to work towards those. We like to achieve them. We like to have our to-do list and cross things off. We like to conquer things, learn things, keep moving forward. And so you need to create that momentum for people, especially if you have, you know, if you're playing the long game too, and you have a really big, audacious vision and mission for your company, you need to celebrate wins and milestones along the way. You need to give people clarity on how they can achieve their own personal career goals in the environment that they're in with you, right? You need to acknowledge that at some point they're probably going to leave the company, but how can you set them up for professional success at your current company and their next one? So, I mean, there's a lot of other things that are great to have in a working environment and at a company, but really those are the keys. And if you can nail all of those and get those right, you are off to a really good start, because essentially what you've created is a talent destination where people want to be there. They're excited to grow. They're committed to the mission. They feel supported. They feel empowered. And they're going to be the ones that are ultimately typically on the front lines and engaging with your customers. And so they're going to be the first impression to the market on your company, your offering.
Talent destination. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. You have your team, but obviously without customers, you don't have a business.
So from there, we transition into equals customers.
Absolutely. And so I have been in customer success my whole career, both as an individual contributor, a team leader, a team builder. And I've really distilled like 8 keys to customer success. Yeah. And so I'd love to walk you through these 8 things, because I feel like if you get these things right on the customer success side, then not only are you able to build long-lasting relationships with your customers, but ultimately you're able to be a trusted partner to them to drive results, which is why they decided to purchase your product or service or engage with you to begin with. Right. And so let's dig into that.
Cool. Let's do.
The first one is be proactive. And so, you know, within customer success, you typically have teams like customer support, customer success, account management. These are all slightly different functions within a customer success org. A customer support team or customer service team, they're what people typically think when they're calling in, emailing in with a problem or a question, right? That group definitely is primarily reactive, but you need to have a proactive customer success or account management function where you're able to shift all reactive work to the frontline support layer, but that customer success is able to proactively partner with clients to drive results.
I love that.
And so there's a key distinction there. They have to be two separate teams under your broader success org so that you can't expect one person to be both reactive and proactive at the same level. It's not conducive to what real life is like. Right. And so often companies will, you know, only have a support team and say that that's success, or they'll try to, you know, shove all of the different tasks and responsibilities within one team and one role. So you really have to separate that and really have a team that is focused on being proactive.
I think about that, but I love that kind of sums up kind of what a lot of stuff I talk about. I love that being proactive customer service team. I love that.
The next three I'll kind of bucket together because there's a lot of interplay between them. And so adding strategic value, number two, managing expectations, number three, and communicating regularly, number four. Right. And so at the end of the day, as long as you're being proactive and are driving the customer towards their desired outcome, you'll be adding strategic value to the relationship. But it's really important that you are in the driver's seat for the customer engagement. You're not letting them drive you, but you are driving them and aligning yourself with their internal goals, not only personally and professionally and for the company, so that they trust you and that they're willing to listen to your strategic guidance and advice. And part of this is really about how you communicate and manage expectations. They say that the cause of unhappiness is an unmet expectation. And so you have the power to control the dynamic with your customer as long as you're clearly communicating what they should be expecting and by when. When there are customer issues, it is almost always a result of some type of miscommunication or mismatched expectation.
Right.
And communicating regularly. You have to, again, be the one that is driving the narrative, that is driving the project plan, that is making sure that everything is moving forward so that the customer can begin to receive the value of their purchase with you.
I think that whole idea ties into the acquisition trap, because the expectations, customer, again, it's the company setting the expectation. And sometimes the company, that's different. That's not just customer service, right? They're unfortunately are the ones that get set up for failure because the expectations were set wrong in the first place. So exactly. That's why it's more important than ever that customer service is not the people to the side, but in the meetings with everybody, like, hey, what does this good customer look like? Okay, what do they look like on the onboarding? What do they look like once we support them? What do they look like a year from now? So that way, anyway, that way we're all in the same. Yeah. And I don't want to go too much in the weeds, but when you said that, it made me think, yeah, you are so right on. The expectations, I mean, they're trying really hard to make sure that they're in alignment with their customer success and then trying to fulfill what they want. But that's tough if somebody else in your company is telling them things that aren't doable.
Absolutely. And that's really two main takeaways for marketing and sales, right? Marketing should lean into your products, flaws or your areas of weakness. It's really interesting when you include some of that in your positioning and your messaging, how it actually creates more.
No company's perfect. No service is perfect.
Exactly.
Right? There's a reason why on Amazon, when you buy something, that you do look at a couple of the bad reviews, you know, because, you know, if it was somebody with only five good reviews, their mother, father, sister, That's why, anyway, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree. You upfront be honest, hey, we're not perfect. Here's what we, you know, I love that.
And the sales process as well. Your sales process is not, I need to just convince every prospect to buy. It's let's have an honest conversation about fit. And if this is going to be a good partnership, given your goals, what we offer and all that good stuff. So absolutely. And customer success, having a seat at the table, with all those teams and helping drive some of those initiatives is really important. So I'll group the next three of these as well that are kind of play off each other. Okay. So we have stay aligned with the decision maker, build authentic relationships, and have the tough conversations early and often. And so really these three are all about making sure that you are plugged in with your customer and the individuals that you work with at that company. And so very often it's not uncommon that maybe your day-to-day points of contact aren't the ultimate decision maker. And so it's really important that you collaborate with your day-to-day contacts, but that you have some type of communication channel with the decision maker so that you're aligned with everybody involved. Yeah. It's really easy to ignore that and just focus on your day-to-day contacts, and then you can be surprised down the road. And building authentic relationships. This goes back to your people too. At the end of the day, your customer is just a person, right? And being a good human, developing rapport, developing a friendship, developing an authentic relationship where you can have some fun, have a laugh, be honest. It goes a long way in really establishing that long-term partnership. People don't want to interact with robots, right? They want to interact with humans. I have customers at every company that I've been at that I still keep in touch with. And it goes a long way.
Yeah.
And then have the tough conversations early and often. So whether this is a mismatched expectation or something comes up that needs to be addressed, sometimes people avoid confrontation.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable. Nobody loves having tough conversations. But in a customer relationship, if you ignore those, you're putting that relationship and that account at risk.
And the longer you or your team don't respond, you screw up or something, it just gives them more time to get madder or frustrated with your company, right? Where if you just take it on the head, call them up, hey, we screwed up, you know, here's what we can do as an alternative. Will that work for you? You know, I mean, and 95% of the time I find that it goes away. But when it doesn't, or it doesn't become a big issue, but what does become a big issue is, you know, people on your team ignoring it. Oh, we don't want to call them. And then pretty soon the person's going like, I have two phone calls in, I haven't got one single call. Totally. The theme is being proactive on your customer service.
Right?
If there's a problem, be proactive.
And the last one here, number eight, is drive results that matter. You can't lose focus that ultimately they decided to buy your product or service because you promised an outcome, right?
And that
outcome could be a lot of different things depending upon your offering. But at the end of the day, that is why they bought. And so you need to make sure that you deliver on the results that were promised, that you deliver that outcome. And if at any point achieving that outcome is at risk or at risk of being delayed, you have to communicate that so they understand what's at stake. And as long as you are driving those results, being proactive, positioning yourself as a strategic advisor, managing expectations and communicating regularly, you can build a really healthy long-term customer relationship. So we have people success, we have customer success, and then company success. And so there are five additional things that I found really separate the good from the great companies with respect to how they think about their company strategy, how they think about company operations and alignment and execution. This is where a lot of things can fall apart, right? You can be doing everything right by your people. You can have the right customer success philosophy and mindset. But there are other factors that have to be figured out in order for your company to actually grow and operate profitably. So I'll go through these five remaining keys to really bring it all together. So the first is you really need to define your ideal customer profile and your customer journey. If you think that anybody can buy your product, you are wrong. You need to get really specific about who your product or service is for. Can that expand over time and evolve? Of course.
Yes.
But you should start very focused and get as specific as possible, especially earlier in your maturity of a company. And you really need to understand what is the customer experiencing when they interact with your brand, with your sales team, with customer success, with your product, with customer service with other people at your company. You really need to understand that full journey and that experience so that it can help you make the right decisions on how you'll execute marketing, what your sales process will be, how you think about onboarding, et cetera. These are things that a lot of companies just skip over. They don't bother going through the exercises to do this, but this is how you anchor in how who you market to, who you sell to, who you build product for, and how you make strategic decisions to continuously improve that experience. If you're not clear on that, it gets very difficult to execute your go-to-market strategy. The second one is be methodical and thoughtful about goal setting. I can't tell you how many times I've been part of a company where they have set a goal that is arbitrary, that was backed into in a spreadsheet. We've all had that experience. And there is no bigger morale killer than goals that cannot be achieved.
Yep. You're so right. But, you know, realistic goals motivate your company. Even if they miss it by a little bit, they're like, damn, let's work harder so you can get the next quarter, next whatever, you know, but not something like a pipe dream that is impossible to get to. So no, I can't agree more with you, because I've been there, seen it.
Absolutely.
And it demotivates it. People, before they even started, demotivates the team.
Yeah, this is a big one. And so you don't succumb to the external pressure from investors or others that make you think you have to get there. I really also think that initially you have to go slow to go fast and start building in the right long-term plays that are going to generate real sustainable growth and not be afraid to do that. The third is that there has to be alignment on goals and incentives. I've also been part of organizations where the marketing team will make their own goal, the sales team will make theirs, CS will make theirs, but they're not actually connected to one another. Or the marketing team can hit their goal, but then the sales team misses their goal.
Which Chris talks about all the time. And it's so true. How can your marketing team be 156%, which he's talked about recently, right? And then your sales team misses theirs by 50%. That's just the most demotivational thing you can do. So
exactly.
So
the goals need to be made together. You need to be looking at the big picture. For example, I know we're going to talk a little bit about net revenue retention and how customer success can really position their function effectively with executive leadership and investors and the board. But really, when you think about it, what is a goal that everyone can be aligned to as a North Star metric? Net revenue retention is a great one, because all teams can have an influence and an impact on that metric.
Right.
If you're marketing to the right customers and bringing in qualified, high intent buyers that really understand the offering, that's going to create a long-term customer that will retain and grow. If your sales process is incentivizing to sell to the right customer at the right time, if your onboarding process is designed to get to time to value as soon as possible, having a metric like that and having all teams anchored to their contribution to that metric is how you can really get that true alignment on goals and incentives across the organization.
I love that. The way you explain it is excellent. I love that.
Number four. So I've led many large teams. And one thing that I can guarantee you, this is a human thing. This is a people thing. Right. There's always points of friction with groups of people and with teams.
Right.
It's natural. And in some cases, actually having a healthy tension can be really productive for people to have different perspectives and viewpoints.
Right.
However, unfortunately, it's easy for healthy tension to become unhealthy or toxic. Right. And so it's really important as a leader that you need to identify if there are points of friction across the organization, and they must be addressed and resolved. And this goes for silly things like politics and ego-driven leaders that have a point to make. None of that is going to fly if you want to build a successful company. So you have to, they all exist. So you have to actively manage this and make sure that you are identifying, addressing, and resolving those points of friction, however they pop up within your organization. And the last one is really having, I think Simon Sinek also calls this the infinite game, the infinite mindset, right? Everyone needs to be playing the long game. Doing things that are going to drive short-term improvements to your goals typically will actually be very detrimental to your long-term plan and strategy and goals of your company. You have to not be willing to sacrifice things like integrity, honesty, or respect to get ahead, right? You have to play well, be a good actor in the game. So we just went through sort of the five keys for people success, eight for customer success, five keys to really bring it all together. Everything that we talked about, honestly, is common sense. It's very straightforward. None of it is really revolutionary. The strategy itself is simple, but the execution is difficult. And it really requires a commitment to all of those values and relentless execution and improvement day in and day out.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great model. And like you said, the key is just a commitment from all levels to execution. So actually on your podcast, you had Chris Hicken. Yeah. He was on, I tell you, that was the big aha moment for me because I've talked about the importance of customer service success and I've done speaking on it and everything. But when he tied it to revenue, I was like, overall customer success does not get the credit they deserve, right? They are, I don't want to say anything negative, but not looked at like secondary to everybody else. Oh, customer service is important. The CEO doesn't fund them good enough. They pay them the lowest wages and all this other stuff, right? So this is where kind of aha moment, how do we make sure that they start getting the respect that they deserve?
Absolutely. And so the approach that Chris Hicken broke down on this episode was really smart. And so he was doing a lot of research on all of the top B2B SaaS companies that exist today. And when you look at all of the top companies, right, and this is like Salesforce, right? These are like the big guys, the giants. What they're reporting to their shareholders, their board, are metrics like net revenue retention, that in the subscription economy for a recurring revenue business model, the retention of that revenue, as well as the potential ongoing expansion and growth of that revenue, is the key driver for company success. And when you look at the most successful companies, they have driven a net revenue retention rate above 100%.
Wow.
110, 120, 125%. And often, depending upon the size of your customer base, you can actually influence more revenue growth from expansion from your current base, especially within year, than net new customer acquisition.
Oh, absolutely. And so I tell everybody all the time, well, you know, startups might be a little bit different, right? But even then, you need to focus on that new expansion stuff. But I tell companies, if you've been in business for a little while, you're sitting on a gold mine. They're called existing customers.
Absolutely. Once you position that North Star metric and then draw the, you know, logical conclusions about how your customer success team is pivotal in retaining and growing that revenue, while also then extrapolating, if we make X percent improvement to net revenue retention, our potential valuation will be perceived as even higher than it is. It brings everything full circle for those stakeholders, right?
That was my aha moment because I just hadn't heard, not saying someone hasn't done it before. I just never have seen it before and heard it before. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was brilliant because it's gonna bring customer service leaders to the forefront where they deserve to be, you know, at the table with everybody else in the discussions. And by tying it to revenue and giving it a number, you're going to get the attention of CEOs and CEO types.
Absolutely.
And so I love that. Before you go, oh, customer retention is so important, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
It's still underfunded. So when I heard you guys talking about tying it to revenue and specifically on running out the numbers, I thought that was brilliant. Chris, his saying was his goal, kind of you had them all tied together on that episode you had on your podcast, is the customer success leader of the future focuses on driving and influencing strategic decisions across every department, not just customer service. I thought that was brilliant. I love that. So, and I've always kind of felt sorry because some of the customer service people that basically I was, you know, selling companies, right? and they were doing a lot. They were doing most of the work, right? And if they didn't do a good job, right, I didn't have happy customers. You know what I mean? So, and a lot of times, again, they didn't get the respect they deserved. I don't think they got paid the money they deserved. So I love the fact when you brought him on, you guys talked about that. That was, I think more companies listen to this podcast. Customer service leaders need to get out there and start getting to the table and say, hey, we deserve respect because look, we bring in this much revenue. And I think more, you know, so that was a big aha moment for me. And it excited me because I thought it's about time, you know, that I see a real simple way for you know, customer service leaders to get the respect they deserve. So
absolutely. Yeah. Chris Hicken is great. CEO of Nuff Said. His company is doing some really great things in the customer success space to continue to elevate the function. And so,
cool.
They're doing some great stuff over there.
Well, we're to the point on the show where the ABM Conversations podcast without this part of the show, which is called the rapid fire section, right?
Let's do it.
And what it is, it's like a game show kind of a thing where I fire off 5 questions at you, right? And they're short questions, but they don't have to be short answers. But anyway, so are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Let's go. So going into next year, 2022, you had one biggest challenge that customer service teams are going to have going forward. What do you think it is?
I think that going forward, I hope to see a shift in customer success getting a lot more involved in the customer acquisition and sales process. I think what happens in that process is so impactful to the long-term retention of a customer. And I would love to see sales becoming more customer centric, CS influencing the sales process and having a seat at the table, them getting involved earlier or, you know, in a late stage sales cycle to help ease the transition. I think this is a really big opportunity for companies, and I hope to see us continue to move in that direction.
Cool. Here's the next one. Let's say you've been in business for a little bit. What comes first? Sales or customer service?
So I would say customer success and customer service. If you're just starting a company, I believe a founder should be the first person that sells the product or the service. And the first hire would be customer success to take care of those customers. Once you begin to create a repeatable process and clarify your ideal customer profile, you can then begin to build out the sales team. No one does this, but invest early in success if you want to build a company in the right way.
That's a great way to put it. And kind of, I don't know why I didn't put the two and two together, but I love it because like you said, a lot of these startups, I mean, big name startups, the first 50 or 100 customers were sold by their founders.
Absolutely.
Right? They were the salespeople, right?
Yep.
So, and they did the marketing too. So, okay, here's one. So what would Megan Bowen, you, like to be known for personally and business-wise a decade from now?
So I would like to be known for championing a path to building companies that focus on their people than their customers and focus on sustainable growth. What Chris and I are doing at Refine Labs is building a company the way we believe it should be built. We're bootstrapping it. We don't have any outside funds. We control our destiny. We're playing the long game and we're seeing a lot of success that way. So I want to be able to prove that you can build a $100 million company without outside investment by putting your people first, your customers first.
Wow.
I believe if I can show people, then people will begin to realize it can be done and we can begin to influence a broad shift across the entire landscape of how founders think about building companies.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Here's the last one. Not including your podcast or Demand Gen Live. Gotta put those aside, right? What's your favorite podcast and why?
I am obsessed with Christopher Lockhead. So
really?
Haven't checked
I
out.
I love it.
Follow your different Lockhead on marketing.
Category design, baby. Love it.
All of his podcasts are amazing. I love category design. He's just, you know, one of his sayings is thinking about thinking is the most important type of thinking. He, whenever I listen to an episode of his podcast, I always feel like it sparks new ideas and gets me thinking about things in a different way. So I really appreciate that because I always leave inspired to think a little bit differently.
I love it.
He's great.
I subscribe to his newsletter and all that stuff. You can't
think of category pirates. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a little novella delivered every week.
It was great. It's been great. And, I really appreciate coming on, me kind of doing the takeover here on the ABM Conversations podcast and, being the host. And like I said, thank you very much for volunteering to being a guest and talking about something that I've been passionate about for years. Your experience and just the way you explain stuff is just, I just love it. I mean, it's just more companies need to follow your model.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott. I love talking about this stuff all day long. So it was great to break down people's success is customer success is company success today. And love the rapid fire section. That was fun.
Awesome. Hey, thank you, Megan. Hey, thanks, everybody. Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.